This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Sarah Haller. How are you, Sarah?
Hi, very well, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. I understand you are the youngest master of wine ever.
Oh, no, sadly. So I recently, when I received it, I was the youngest master of wine in the world. And as of a few now, probably months, there is somebody younger than I. So not the youngest in the land.
Did they
anymore.
Get it younger than you, or
no? He's a year younger than I am. So we're the same age. But in fact, there are people not recently, but who got it in their very early 20s. I was 29. So sadly, not the youngest ever.
Oh, never mind. Never mind. Oh, wow, this is a long wine career ahead anyway, so.
I hope so.
Yeah, excellent. And you've got good teeth as well, which is unusual. Usually by the master of wine, the teeth
start. Oh, yeah, deeply stained. I'm not going to plug the product, but I have a rather good electric toothbrush that I'm a big fan of.
Lovely. Okay, what we're going to talk about today is just a little bit about yourself, but I've just been at a masterclass in Sardinian wines. Mm. And to be honest, I don't know anything about Sardinian wines.
Yeah, well, I don't think a lot of people do, to be honest. I spent a bit of time in Sardinia because I had a friend when I was living in Turin, actually. I met her and her husband was half Piemontese and half Sardinian, which sounds more random than it is because, you know, at one point they were
sounds
part
Italian
of the same.
To me.
Yeah, yeah, true. But very different cultures, even though they were part of the same kingdom at one point before Italy was unified. And so we went to Sardinia and sort of sailed around, and we were in the area actually that is famous for producing Carignano, which I'll be talking about later today. But unfortunately, at the time, this was a number of years ago, so I'm not sure that Carignano del Sulcis at the time had really taken off yet.
Okay.
So, anyway, not enough time there visiting vineyards, but definitely very interested.
A lot of people probably don't know where Sardinia is.
Right.
Where is it?
So it's one of the two islands, the two large islands off the western coast of the Italian peninsula.
Yep.
So it's 200 kilometers to the west of Italy and 200 kilometers to the north of the North African coast.
Okay. Oh, so I always think of it. So it's near Sicily, is it?
It's sort of round the bend and up from Sicily.
Because I always think of it further north than Sicily.
Yeah, it's definitely further north than Sicily.
Okay. All right. So the climate there is probably Mediterranean, I would have thought.
Yeah, Mediterranean.
But where?
Well, because it's a really large island, the second largest in the Mediterranean, it actually gets some continentality. So if you go to the inland part, especially because it's higher altitude, it's very hilly, even mountainous in certain parts, these kind of granite mountains, you do get really quite cool areas, even though for the most part it's really quite hot. And the southernmost part is almost subtropical.
Okay. And the masterclass, we've just had two flights of wines, or two big flights of wines anyway. One was Vermentino, and the other one, I'll call Grenache, but you're going to call...
Canonau,
which is exactly the same as Grenache, almost.
Indeed, yeah. And there's a big debate over the ownership of the grape variety, whether it's native to Sardinia or native to Spain, which I got into a bit in the class.
Yeah.
I think it's certainly a grape that either came from Spain to Sardinia or from Sardinia to Spain sometime between the 1300s and the 1600s.
Yeah,
okay. Sort of a Renaissance.
Okay, because what's his name? Julio Val...
José Villamos.
Yeah, you're so good at it. I tell you, when you were talking to the Italians, I was like, masterful. He seemed to put it in Spanish, didn't he, when he was doing his DNA analysis?
Yeah, well, because he's less biased. He's Swiss, so he's not going to necessarily be in any particular camp. There are different schools of thought. The practical, let's think about this. The one is the historical mentions. And Attilio Scienza, who's the scientific director of the Vinitaly International Academy.
Yeah.
So part of the triumvirate of myself, Henry DeVar, the other faculty member, and Scienza, who are now in charge of the Italy International Academy. So his theory is that because the first mentions historically in the early 1300s of this grape variety being made into wine are from Sardinia, about 300 years earlier than the first mentions in Spain.
Oh, okay.
That it's got to be Sardinian. But then there's been a lot of controversy about it since then, because it was thought for a long time that there was more genetic diversity of the grape variety in Spain, because you have these different color variations, right? Yeah. The gray version and the white version, whereas you don't find any of that in Sardinia.
Oh, so it's had more time to mutate.
Exactly.
And Grenache isn't a grape variety. Like Pinot Noir mutates like crazy, whereas Grenache, I've never thought of as a mutator.
So it's a funny thing. Pinot Noir is thought of as a grape variety that is very prone to mutations. But actually, looking at grapevine genetics, it's more likely that it's actually just a very old variety. So it's actually had lots of time to mutate and developed like Pinot Gris and Pinot Blanc, rather than that it's just naturally genetically predisposed towards mutations.
Okay.
But anyway, sidetrack Pinot. But Grenache, yeah, it's not one for which there is the same track record as you have with Pinot. So there's no reason to believe that it's such an old variety that it would have had time to have all these mutations. However, the thing that happened in 2011 that sort of shook the five people who care about these things to their core was that actually with some genetic testing of the Canonau population, if you will, in Sardinia, there's a discovery that the genetic diversity is actually much greater among Canonau than it is in Garnacha in Spain.
Oh, okay.
Even though it doesn't have these color mutations, suggesting that perhaps it is native to Sardinia after all. There's a theory that it was brought by the Phoenicians. Because they came from the Levant, which was sort of the original domestication center for Vitis vinifera. So I doubt we'll ever have a definitive answer, but it is interesting to look at Canonau, Grenache, and Garnacha in this sort of triangle of areas that all kind of shared populations at various points in history to understand what the fundamental character of the grape is.
Let's talk about Grenache because we've been talking about it. And next week we'll probably talk a bit about Vermentino, which is a grape variety that I really don't normally drink. And I was talking to Monty Walden earlier and he was saying, how do you choose your wines at a restaurant? And I go, I choose the wine that I haven't had or I don't know what it is.
Right.
And I had some Vermentino the other day. So that tells you about my experience with Vermentino.
Right.
But Grenache, so we tasted, what was it, 9 wines?
Yeah.
And there was some similarities, you know, particularly early on, they were tasting more what I would expect of Grenache.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then as we got into the tasting further and further and further, some of them started to have a lot more weight than I was expecting. Mm. We had one that was slightly sweet and quite unusual, you know. You had a conversation with him, and he said it was. I heard the word pesetta, which to me means drying the grapes out.
Yeah.
But you said the wine was late harvest, so I got a little bit confused there.
Yeah. He was a very talkative producer, so there was a huge amount to translate there. My understanding from trying to listen to him and remember everything that he was saying, so I could translate it a moment later, was that it was late harvest rather than passito. Thinking about the acidity on the grape, right? Because when you make passito, say Amarone, the grapes are actually harvested earlier than they would be for normal Valpolicella.
But then you dry them out on mats or in sheds, yeah?
Yeah, so that you have enough acidity so that even through the drying process, you manage to keep them in balance.
Why do you lose acidity during the drying process?
You don't lose acidity per se, but you gain so much sugar concentration that the balance is thrown off.
Yeah.
The nature of the acidity also changes. It's kind of like you lose all of the malic acidity.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you would have done malolactic conversion later anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But you also get some of these fermentation-type acids that build up. So passito is not just about concentrating. There's also a lot of changes that take place. But my understanding was that it is a late harvest, which is kind of a normal practice, actually, in Sardinia.
And Grenache, because it's such a thin skin, you get a lot of passelage or dehydration of the grape.
And
you said it was a little bit windy there as well, which does encourage passelage.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, Grenache is a vine that's very resistant to wind, right? So it doesn't get damaged by the wind, but you do get this dehydration that takes place with the berries through the windiness. It's also affected by the Mistral, yeah. Which I think is a nice tie to Châteauneuf-du-Pape.
Yeah, I suppose I don't think of the Mistral as making it that far into the Mediterranean, but it doesn't just suddenly stop at the Rhone Valley, does it?
No. So yeah, it is a very kind of violently windy place, Sardinia, obviously affected by all the different topographical features.
And you said they do a little bit of, it's bush vine as well, which sort of helps with the wind a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of old vines as well, which is quite exciting. It's unfortunate there's actually not that much planting happening recently, kind of really tapering off.
Why is that?
I think because of the challenges with growing the grape variety. They're just also because there was so much intermixing of lower quality vine material. Just the quality of the wine on average that was coming out was not that encouraging. Okay. So people have turned to other varieties. Like, for example, Carignano, which has become a real hit.
Is Carignano the same as Carignan, but with an Italiano?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, because Carignan isn't really known as, I would normally think of it as sort of a bang them out jug wine type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a sexy grape variety in the vast majority of the world. But Carignano del Sulcis, which we'll try a couple of later today, grown in the southwest of Sardinia, is known for being a kind of velvety, soft, creamy expression.
Oh, okay, and the tannins aren't too hard.
Apparently not. But remember, we're talking in an Italian context. So the tannins are always a bit elevated over what you would expect elsewhere.
Yeah. Okay. You talked a little bit about, there's some stuff you said that I wouldn't mind just teasing out, because you said it, mm-hmm. and some of that I've never heard before, so I'm just like, it's a little bit geeky, but
right.
You said that at one point you were talking about the acidity, and you talked about potassium and the plant not taking up potassium and its effect on acidity, and I've never heard, I know potassium is a key nutrient to vines, but I've never really heard about it in relation to the acidity in the wine, so what's going on there?
Yeah, so potassium is something that really affects the pH. It's not so much the acidity per se, but it affects the pH of the wine. So when I was talking to producers of Grenache in McLaren Vale, mm-hmm. they were talking about their soils not having the levels of potassium. So they were growing it mainly on really sandy, well-drained soils. And so because it wasn't able to draw up the potassium from the soil, the pH of the Grenache was really low.
Now, the low pH means a high acidity.
Higher acidity, yeah.
Okay, so sandy soils might equate to a higher acidity. Is that the same in just sandy soils in general, or?
Well, they are lower in potassium.
I suppose it depends on how much organic material is sitting on top of the sand.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think we talk about soil categories as if they're uniform from place to place, but it's really a matter of proportion of sand, proportion of silt.
That sort of makes sense a little bit, because I always think of sandy soils as being lighter styles of wine. Mm-hmm. When I'm thinking about it, I think, I'm very basic, but, I think, what gives acidity, lighter style of wine?
Yeah.
Sandy soils, lighter style. Limestone tends to give you more acidity. Yeah. Clay tends to give you slightly richer wines. Mm-hmm. Stony soils gives you riper, heavier, more alcoholic wines.
Yeah.
So I keep it very simple. Mm. But I've never really thought about why sandy soils might be more lighter in style.
Right.
So.
It is a puzzle. largely because in my favorite area, in Piemonte, in Lange, The rationale is sort of flipped on its head. Like, areas that have more sand sometimes are the ones producing the more robust wine styles.
Is that the Helvetian soils? Is that right?
Yeah, Helvetian / Saravalian is the new term.
Is it? Okay.
Whereas the areas with the blue clay are the ones producing the more delicate, those are the Tortonian soils.
They're
producing, like in La Mora, the more delicate perfume styles. So the soil is very confusing, to be honest.
Yeah.
Even as an MW, it was one of the topics I went through circles round and round and round.
Yeah. The other thing that you talked about was... You talked about low pH and lower acidity, because normally I think of acidity. I'm very, I know I know that the lower the pH, the more acidic the soil, the higher the pH, the more alkaline, seven's the middle point.
Yeah.
So I always think of, if you've got a lower pH, you've got more potential for high levels of acidity in the wines.
So I was saying the high pH soils, like limestone-rich soils, tend to produce more acidic wine, whereas acidic soils like granite usually moderate the acidity in the wine. It's sort of the opposite.
No, I don't quite. I'm normally quite good at this sort of stuff, but maybe it was the wines I've tasted or something. Can you say that again nice and slowly for me?
So. Okay, yeah. So, high pH soils.
Alkaline?
Alkaline, yeah. Exactly. Soils like the ones that have high limestone content,
yeah,
right, tend to increase the acidity.
Yes.
So lower the pH.
Yes, wine. Yeah.
Low pH soils, so acidic soils, yeah, like granite, tend to raise the pH and lower the acidity.
So make the wines seem less acidic.
Less acidic. That's why, like in Beaujolais, Gamay, which is a very tart grape,
yep,
is often, it's the high quality sites often have lots of granite.
Yeah, yeah. Beaujolais is granite, isn't it? And okay, and that makes it less acidic, which makes it sweeter.
Yeah, it sort of moderates the acidity.
Yeah, yeah, because acidity tends to rob the wine. Well, acidity can bring up the tannins and hide the fruit, so
yeah,
that makes sort of makes sense to me. Okay, now that's cool. I'll get there. I'll replay this several times and I'll try and work out if I can understand exactly what's going on.
It's a lot. It's like thinking about it, like high, low, yeah.
I know. No, that's really good. It's always nice to try and just get it thinking through and understanding it. That's brilliant. Okay then, Sarah, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay, fantastic.
Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Great.